Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Rodney Allen Greenblatt. He is an artist and author of Dharma Delight, and also known for Papa Rappa the Rapper, Thunder Bunny, and many other cartoons. Rodney, it's great talking to you.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's fun.
And I'm also joined here with Francis Nelly.
Hi, Rodney.
Hi there.
How did this all start out? When did you first start creating art?
Well, I started creating art when I was about 3 years old. My parents somehow figured out that I was an artist, and they even gave me a little smock and a little beret, and I stood in front of the refrigerator and I made abstract paintings, and it kind of went from there.
Can you tell us about your book, Dharma Delight, and how you intertwine Buddhism into your work?
Yeah, sure. Well, I started studying Zen formally in about 2007. And I have had a lifetime interest in Zen, but I never really was able to get to do it. But I started actually practicing at the Village Zendo, which is a Zen temple in New York City, right near where I used to live in Manhattan. And I started going there, and I started learning about Zen and learning how to meditate. So I did that, but I also started helping them out a little bit with graphic design and some of their advertising and posters. And I started making some kind of interesting artwork to promote things at the Zendo, which were kind of Buddhist oriented. And then I kind of felt like I had a knack for it, and I started making a whole bunch of kind of Buddhist-inspired artwork. And after a few years of doing posters and designs for the Zendo, I realized that I had enough material to make a book. So I started putting it together. I got a publisher. I think it probably took about 7 years to get it all together, 3 years of production. After I decided that it was going to be a book, and it came out in 2016, and I'm very proud of it.
You create the art behind many video games. How did you get into the video game industry?
Well, I've only worked on one video game project, which is Parappa the Rapper, and it had three sequels and a television show in Japan. It all started because I was working with a rep, an agent actually from Tokyo, who was looking for foreign illustrators, European and American illustrators, to do work in Japan. So I started doing some design work for advertising in Japan, and it just took off. It just was like wildfire. The Japanese market really loved my style. So I did a bunch of advertising jobs, and then eventually my agent decided that we should try to make a contract with Sony. Sony had a licensing company that was making cute products. So I was hired as a designer to design toys and stuffed animals and character goods and printed lunch boxes and stickers and all that kind of stuff. And I did that for about a year, and then, or maybe almost 2 years, and then I met up with the team that was just starting to work on PlayStation 1, which was just about to come out in Japan. And they asked me if I wanted to be on a team to work with this pop star named Masaya Matsura. And they wanted to know if I wanted to design the characters for this kind of Simon Says game that they were going to put out on PlayStation. It sounded great, so I did it, and the game was a big hit. So that's how I ended up working on Parappa the Rapper.
Francis, do you want to ask a question?
This might sound interesting, but I actually discovered your work from the most unlikely place. But when I was a teenager, I was a big fan of They Might Be Giants, and I noticed you did the art on the very first album, and I had no idea. And when I was researching, I found that out.
Yeah,
how did that happen? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I lived in the East Village in New York City at the time. I was just getting my start in the gallery scene there, and I just gotten out of art school, and I was doing some pretty cool stuff in art galleries. I'm not sure how they found me, but they were just getting their start too. They were just starting to do what they ended up doing, and they just contacted me and asked me if I would draw some Dr. Seuss-like scene for their album cover. So I did. I'm not sure where the Dr. Seuss kind of thing came from. That might have come from me. I don't know. But they were really great, and I loved their music. So it was really easy to do. And I think that's one of my first album cover, at least major release album cover artworks. So I'm glad you saw that, because I think that was pretty fun.
Would you say that Dr. Seuss is your main artistic inspiration? And besides that, what else are some of your main inspirations?
Well, Dr. Seuss is probably up there in the top 10 somewhere. I love those books. And I always had a copy of One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish somewhere around. Then when my kids were growing up, I read them those. But my inspirations come from lots of different places, but cartoons are really important to me. And growing up in the 1960s, I loved, and the 70s, I loved Bullwinkle and all that stuff. And also a few Japanese things. I loved Ultraman, and I loved Speed Racer, and a few other imported things that they showed on our local channel. I think that's when I lived in Maryland. I lived in Bethesda, Maryland. I went to elementary school and high school there. So I think I loved all that stuff. Then also my parents had a few art books. And those art books really inspired me too. I think we had a Picasso and a Matisse and a Manet and some other Miro maybe. I think we had a Miro book. And I really loved those. So it's kind of my work, if you look at it, it's kind of a combination of cartoon, Saturday morning style cartoons, and modernist art, which I was really inspired by.
Can you tell us about your music and what electronic instruments do you use?
Oh, yeah. I've been working on electronic music again, and I have made a whole bunch of my own produced electronic music CDs. It's kind of minimalist, kind of cartoony, weird music that I love to make. I've had many synthesizers. I'm kind of a synthesizer geek, and I've had many keyboards. I'm sort of down to a very basic set these days. I've got the Nord Lead and the Moog, little fatty. And, oh, I have one of these really cool, tiny little Teenage Engineering OP1. It's a really fun little keyboard that looks like a toy, but actually it's a whole professional little machine. So between those and computer software, I've been making some fun music. So I'm going to have a new album out in the spring called Beep Beep Type Music. So you can find it on my website and stuff like that. But it'll come out maybe in the spring.
Francis, do you want to ask a question?
Do you know about the vaporwave genre? And would you consider releasing your music on cassette tape?
Well, it's really funny for me, since I'm old, that I used to use cassette tapes. And I was so glad when they were done. And you didn't have to, like, sit there and make complicated dubs on them, because it was kind of hard to like make a dub on a cassette tape. I think it's funny that there's a new interest in it, and they are cute. I mean, it is a neat little package to hand out your music in. So I don't know. I suppose I could dump out my my digital music and put it on a cassette. I still have a cassette deck here, so it's possible. And maybe people would buy it like a collector's item or something. Who knows? I could draw on the cassette or something like that.
As far as music goes, do you have any musical influences?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of musical influences. I'm a big fan of this German group called Mouse on Mars.
Oh, wow. They're my favorite band, too. I have a sad story, because when I was 21, I just learned how to drive a car. They came into Philadelphia, and it was a rainy Tuesday, and I couldn't go, and I missed out, and they never came back again. That always is my biggest regret ever. It's funny you say Mouse on Mars. I'm a huge fan, but...
Well, I think you could probably see them again. I think they still tour.
I think they're in Cincinnati coming up, but eventually when they'll come around the area, hopefully I'll see them again. Or one time, I'll see them.
Well, I love their sound. I love their experiments, and I love their beats, and my music isn't really beat-driven, but I just love what they can do with all their gear, and I just think they're really great. I mean, that's just one of many, many bands that I listen to. I listen to lots of different kinds of music all the time.
I just recently saw Blank Banshee, and that's kind of like in the cutting edge vaporwave genre, and he had his album was just on cassette tape. And now they go for like $200 or $300 on eBay, but I got it when it was $12.
Wow.
I don't know, but that's exactly the whole cassette thing coming up. But I just find that very interesting.
Wow. Well, maybe I should try the cassette thing. That sounds good. I went to Albany. I went to this big theater in Albany, and I went and saw Yes about a month ago. Which was really great. I was a big Yes fan when I was a teenager. And it was fun to see them, and they're still like rocking out. Kind of a group of old men at this point, but they sounded great.
Could you talk about the Rodney Shop and the development behind it?
Yeah, sure. Since I moved here to Catskill, it's a small town in upstate New York, my wife and I bought a building right here on Main Street. An old building that needed some work, and we did some repairs, and it's in really good shape. But it has two storefronts. One has a kind of a pet accessories store, kind of a not a pet shop, but like a pet food and toys store. And then the other side was another small shop, so it had two storefronts, and that one became empty. So I realized I had so much stuff left over from my work in Japan. Enough stuff to be able to sell in a shop. I used to sell some of it online, but I sort of had been storing it. And when I moved, I was so busy, I couldn't do anything with it. So I decided to open a shop. I've never done a retail thing myself, so it was an experiment. And I opened last May, and I just closed for the season at the beginning of January. And it was pretty good. So it was a pretty good run. I sold a lot of stuff, a lot of Parappa the Rapper merchandise that I had been hoarding, and Thunder Bunny. And I still have a lot of stuff left, so I'm going to open again in May. And I hope people will come to the Rodney Shop. And I'm usually there, at least on Saturday, Friday and Saturday. If you want to meet me, you can just come to the shop. It's right in the middle of the town of Catskill.
Is it only open on Friday, Saturdays, or is there going to be a full special day on May?
I'm only open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that seems to be the best. It's a really small town. I don't think I could really get enough customers during the week. It's kind of busier on the weekend. So that seems to be working. So, yeah, it's only going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But on Sundays, I'm going to have to go to New York City, it looks like. So I don't know if I'll be there on Sundays this year, but I'll try. Anyway, I'm going to post on my website. I have a website for the Rodney Shop, therodneyshop.com, where you can see the schedule. And if you did want to come and meet me, you'd probably come on a Friday or a Saturday.
Are you currently working on any cartoons?
No, I'm not working on any animations these days. I have been making some still images. I'm still puttering around with my house. And of course, the Rodney Shop requires a lot of planning and work. So I'm pretty busy. I also have a meditation class that I give on Tuesday and Thursday mornings here in the town. So I am pretty booked up with stuff. But I will get back to it. I think I might, it'd be fun to make an animation for my music when the music comes out. So I'm thinking about that.
Does meditation help you with your art?
Meditation helps me with everything. It's just a way to look at yourself and become a little more aware of what's going on around you. So it's a very useful thing. Does it help me in my art specifically? I think so. Well, especially because I made a whole bunch of like Buddhist-inspired artwork. But even when I'm not making that kind of artwork, it's nice to have the possibility of a meditative mind somewhere. Even when you're working frantically to get something done, it's nice to know that that's a possibility. So yeah, I'm glad that I'm able to do that.
Could you talk more about the philosophy of your work and the relationship behind it with Buddhism?
Ooh, good question. The philosophy of my work, you know, it's hard for any artist to describe the philosophy of their work because it's always kind of changing. But basically, when you look at my work, there's a lot of consistency as far as the colors and the forms. And I think when we talked about my inspirations, my childhood and teenage inspirations, you can still see that in pretty much everything I do. I loved cartoons and I love that kind of imagery. The philosophy of it, I think in the beginning I was always trying to be upbeat. I really felt like a lot of art was very harsh and critical, and I really wanted to sort of make something that was fun to look at, but thoughtful at the same time. I accomplished that, but I've changed a lot. I've done lots of different things, and I for a while I was making completely abstract works, and I didn't have cartoon characters or googly-eyed monsters or anything like that, and that was really fun too. And somehow, it managed to maintain at least the feeling of my work, even without the characters, which was kind of interesting, at least interesting for me. I like to experiment and try different things. My work goes through different phases. I mean, you can look on my website and see how I've, over the years, done different kinds of things. The Buddhist phase of stuff that I made is really different than the things that I made the work that I made in 2005 is really different from the stuff that I made in 2012. I was just really trying different things. The philosophy I don't know, what is it? Just trying to enjoy life, just trying to make it work, and trying to be aware of yourself and kind of thoughtful fun, I guess, is what I'm always sort of working at. It's hard to say, but there you go.
Do you speak Japanese?
Oh, that would be great. No, I don't. I tried really hard to. I even had like a private teacher, and I failed. It's too hard. My brain just didn't wrap around. You have to be able to memorize stuff, and I'm just not good at that. And I just decided finally one day to give up. Which was fine. There's something to be said for failure. And I just was happier after I quit trying to speak Japanese.
Parappa the Rapper, you were saying that was primarily aired in Japan?
Well, the game was a worldwide hit. It sold millions of copies in Japan and Europe. Mostly England. It did very well in Great Britain. and it did well in the United States, but it really did fabulously in Japan. I think everyone in Japan, probably in the right age group, played that game. And then in Japan, they ported it over to a TV show. So it was an anime, regular cartoon animation on regular TV, on Fuji TV, for about a year also. So it really had a great run. And Parappa did a lot of promotions for other products and other companies. So it was really a great project.
So did you just design the basic art, or you did the animation aspects as well?
No, I was just the character and the world designer. I only worked on the still images of the characters' designs and different views of the characters. And then I did the worlds that the game takes place in, the set, the backdrops, and the all the little details. But I wasn't involved in actually doing the animation. There was a whole group doing the computer animation for the games.
And what were some of the inspirations for the characters and the world it takes place in?
Well, the game, there was a whole team behind the game, and they had a writer, and the writer had a basic outline of what this game was going to be. Basically, it was going to be a young guy who wants to learn how to rap. So they needed a character to play the young man. And then they needed teachers for him to learn how to rap from. So they kind of had generally some ideas of what they wanted. And then I just made sketches just based on their kind of feeling of what these parts, kind of like parts in a movie, would be. And I gave them a bunch of sketches, just drawing from my own imagination. And they sort of chose the ones that were closer, and then I resketched until I got what they wanted. They loved my work, so it was really an easy process at first to design the characters and have a lot of fun with it. So I designed all the crazy characters, teacher characters in the game, the Chop Chop Master Onion and Cheep Cheep the Cooking Chicken. I drew all those, and I gave them their names. And then the game team incorporated it into the story. So it was really sort of fun. It was a collaboration in a lot of ways.
I liked the game series so much that I really liked the Rodney Fun comic collection that I sought after and bought. And after reading those comics, I just wish there were more Parappa comics in that universe, you know, with Unjammer Lammy and everyone down there.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the problems was Sony was a complicated company to work for, and there was a lot of things I wanted to do, but I just really wasn't able to because of the way the rights and everything got divided up and the different things that they wanted to produce themselves. So in the end, I didn't really have that much. They weren't asking me to make the things. I made that Rodney Fun comic on my own, and a lot of people love it, and it kind of fleshes out the characters in a certain way. But I was really hoping Sony would have stepped up and hired me to do more stuff like that, but they didn't. So I was kind of just sort of on my own, which always leads me to different things. When I'm not given a specific task, I just sort of wander and invent new things to discover for myself. So that's kind of what happened. I mean, I really wish I had been able to do more of those comics because it was really fun.
Could you talk about your friendship with the band Puffy?
Yeah, sure. Puffy is two amazingly talented young women. They're Japanese, and in the mid 2000s, they were huge. They just had hit after hit, and they were a Sony Music artist, and there was some connection between my team at Sony in the licensing company that I worked with, and Sony Music. And one of the designers there just thought it would be great for me to work with them. So I met them, and they were really very nice. And they asked me to design the covers for their singles, like mini singles. Remember those little CDs? And they used to come in a little little folder. Mm-hmm. Well, I designed like a whole series of those for every one of their singles. And that was really exciting because they were really top chart singles for Puffy. And Puffy, Ami and Yumi both were very open to my work, and they asked me to do a couple other things for them. I designed the set for their TV show. I mean, that's how big they were. They had their own midnight TV show for a while, and I designed the sets and the furniture, and there were some puppets and other weird stuff on the show that I designed. And the show is called Pop, 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 Puffy.
It was like HR Puff and stuff.
It was a little, that was a little bit of my inspiration, but it didn't quite go that far because it was really about them. They were kind of like the talk show hosts in this crazy kind of Pee-wee's Playhouse looking set that I designed. But I designed two. The first one was kind of Pee-wee's Playhouse looking in a certain way, but the second one I tried to make it like a kind of a 50s space age, like kind of a, not Jetsons, but something like that. That looked really cool too. But anyway, they were really nice. And I actually asked one of them to translate my book from English to Japanese. And Ami did the translation on my second Thunder Bunny book. So it was fun. I'm still kind of a little bit in touch with them, but I haven't been back to Japan in a couple of years. But I'm sure when I go back, I'll try to see them.
Is the whole 50s space age aesthetic, is that an influence on your work?
I guess a little bit. I mean, I do love those forms. I don't know. I think if you really look through my work, you don't see too much of that. But the colors, maybe. I think a lot of the sort of 50s-ish colors turned me on when I was a kid.
What advice do you give to someone who's interested in getting into the arts, whether it's showing art in gallery or putting art towards something, like whether it's cartoons or set design or whatever?
Let's see. I guess, first of all, it's really difficult, and you really have to work. You have to practice. And any chance you get to practice whatever craft you're going for, you should. And the great thing about the internet now is that you can share your stuff. And that was one thing that was a little more difficult when I was starting out. But get it out there. Get your stuff out there and get some feedback from your friends. And you will benefit from that. Staying in your own home and making lots and lots of things and hoping to be discovered won't work. You gotta get out there. Find good teachers if you can go to art school, do it. If you aren't able to, meet artists and sweep the floor of their studio. I don't know what you have to do, but you gotta make your connections, and I think that will be a starting place. Lots of practice and developing some connections, and you'll find your way.
This might be a little as my final question, but being interested in Japanese culture, I actually come across your art sometimes out of nowhere. And in particular, I see it a lot on a lot of Family Mart stuff.
Yeah.
The frog. And sometimes I see it on credit card. And I'm just curious, how do these Japanese agencies get a hold of your work? And as well as... maybe talk a little bit about, try to put this in, Cafe Rodney, too.
Oh, gosh. Well, I have an agent in Japan. His name is Tak Iwayoshi, and he's just been great. He really works hard to get my work out there. Doing advertising is a good way to make money, and we were always hopeful to get big advertising accounts if possible. And we did a few. We did mostly kind of one-offs for different companies, but we got a job working for this huge convenience store chain called Family Mart. And I had no idea how big it was. I mean, it is just, I mean, they at that time they had 4,000 stores in Japan, but I'm sure they have double that amount at this point. But they hired me to draw characters for each one of these like food products, kind of like microwavable food products or sandwiches in packages. So I made a different funny, weird character for each one of these foods. And it was really popular. And then they made a TV commercial for each one of them. So there were 10 TV commercials. I had no idea about the numbers that, I mean, the amount of people that watched 10 commercials in rotation for a chain that had over 4,000, maybe 5,000 stores. It was just really epic. And everyone in Japan knew my characters. So I got a couple other jobs doing that too, and it was really exciting. So with all the excitement, we decided to open a cafe in the middle of Tokyo, which was fun, but we were not really restaurateurs at all, and we only lasted for 2 years, but it was pretty fabulous.
Was it Japanese food?
No, it was supposed to, they wanted it to be New York style. That was really funny. And I had like bagels and I don't know what was in there. We had a lot of trouble with getting the right cook, and it was kind of a mess. But we had a great time and everybody loved it. The people who came to the cafe loved it. But the rent was too high and we couldn't keep it going, so it ended. But it was really fun. I did the whole interior. I hand-painted all the furniture, and the place was great.
Rodney Allen Greenblatt, it's been an excellent show. I want to thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you for connecting with me.
And also, thank you, Francis Nelly.
It's really nice to talk to you, Rodney.
Yeah, thanks a lot.